Next on the agenda, we have a presentation by our Executive Vice President Barbara Wilson, covering the fiscal year 2020 budget request.
Thank you, Chair Koritz, and some of this will be repeat because you've heard glimpses of it from the President and from Avijit, but this is just a much more deep dive into our FY 2020 budget request and what we're hoping that you will approve today. So I'll just start with a little bit of context. Most of this will be obviously very familiar to you, but it's a reminder that we're living in a context that is a multi-year endeavor and that we've undergone a number of commitments that do affect our budget going forward. One is that we've had a four-year undergraduate tuition freeze for in-state students, and that is something that we've committed to hold costs constant as much as possible. We've also, during that time, while we've frozen tuition, we've enrolled over 3,000 more Illinois undergraduates, which represents an 8% increase over the last 5 years. Strong commitment as a state public land-grant institution to our students in the state. We've also increased financial aid by 162% in 10 years. So Avijit showed 5 years, but this is over 10 years, and I'll show you a little more data on that. Tremendous commitment to building back affordability into what we do, particularly at the undergraduate level. And we've reduced administrative costs. So we feel like we've been doing a lot of good things, and that is a really important context for this year's request. Let me just remind you of a couple of the details around these contexts, and they're in the next slides. Here's a slide you've seen before on institutional aid. And it shows you FY17. We haven't quite updated it to FY18, which will show even more growth. But here you'll see that the blue is the institutional aid that we provide for our students. The green is federal and state combined. And we now provide more than half of the institutional aid to our students in the big bucket. So 55% of the aid that goes to our students comes from inside our institutions, institutional resources, and that's changed dramatically over time. So the bar graph on the right shows you over 10 years how this map has shifted, really. In the 2007, you can see that much more of the aid came, or it was more evenly split between state and federal, and we've definitely bumped up the aid overall, and now we represent a much bigger share of it. We want to continue to increase this funding, and you'll see in our budget request that some of our increase is a result of our interest in doing that. As a result of this strong commitment to financial aid, a good number of our undergraduates at each of our institutions do not pay full tuition and fees. So this is the percent of undergraduate residents, our Illinoisan students, who pay less than full tuition and fees at each of our institutions. At Urbana, 60%, at Chicago, 70%, and at UIS, 79% do not pay full tuition and fees. They're getting some financial aid. So that's a pretty important commitment. It's one that I think we need to publicize more, and it's one that we're going to continue to work on as we increase financial aid in the next few years. In addition, we've cut our costs, especially on the administrative side. You've seen that from Avijit's slides, but I'll just reinforce that by giving you an example of our FTE changes over time. This is just during the last three or so years, FY 2015 to 2018. We've reduced non-instructional FTE by about 270 people. FTE, I guess I should say, because sometimes it's partial FTE. And this represents a decrease of 1.7% in our staffing. A good chunk of this came at the system level in our system offices, where we worked really hard to reduce our administrative costs and protect the academic missions of the universities. You'll see that it's gone up just a little bit as our budgets come back, but we're still very closely monitoring our costs and our expenditures around administration. So just to remind you, and this is again a graph that was in part of Avijit's slides, but it just gives you a reminder what the state appropriation has looked like over time the last few years or so, and you'll see that in 2016, that's where we received about 28% of the appropriation that we were supposed to receive, and that bucket never got filled in by the state. So we are continuing to work hard with that disadvantage going forward, and we just have to keep reminding ourselves of that, because that was a very big hit, and we managed to maintain quality in spite of some very significant state challenges around funding. So what does our request look like this year? Tim's already announced the amount. We are asking for an additional request of over our FY19 budget by about $97.9 million. This is an increase of 16.5% over 2019, which seems like a lot, but I'll give you a little more context in a minute. We have really good reasons for advocating for a strong increase as we go forward. So let's look at what that looks like in terms of specifics. And I'm sorry the print is a little small, but hopefully in your board book you can see this a little bit more closely. One of the things we're continuing to really hammer on is ensuring our competitiveness, and a big chunk of our increase is devoted to that. We need to continue to have salary programs. I think you've witnessed the consequence of when we don't pay our people what they need to be paid. And this, in part, is faculty as well as staff. We have to have a competitive salary program. We're advocating a 2% merit program. That's frankly not probably as much as we need, but it will do a good job of getting us a little bit further along in terms of pay. And we would include in this a CEMER program, compression market equity and retention, of 3%, which would allow our colleges and departments to work around certain individual cases that need to be paid attention to in terms of salaries that have fallen behind or that simply need to be dealt with in order to retain people. If you've looked at your board book, you know that we have work to do, particularly on faculty salaries. So we show you what our salaries look like benchmarked against peers. And even when we adjust for cost of living, Urbana is currently fifth out of its 10 peer groups in terms of salaries. Chicago is fifth out of its 10 peer groups, and Springfield is sixth out of its 8 peer groups in terms of faculty salaries. So if we don't keep at the salary issues, we're going to lose talent, and that's a really important part of this package. We're also, again, going to devote a certain amount of money to undergraduate scholarships, in this case $10 million for Illinois undergraduates primarily. And we want to devote a certain amount of money to recruiting new faculty. You've heard us say that we've continued to increase our enrollments, and we've frankly not kept up with our faculty numbers in the meantime. And in your board book also, we benchmark against our peers in terms of faculty-student ratios, and we're losing competitiveness on that front. Urbana was, just back in 2008, Urbana was sixth out of its 10 peer groups, and now it's dead last in terms of faculty-student ratios. Chicago, back in 2008, was third out of its 10 peer groups, and now it's seventh in terms of faculty-student ratios. And Springfield was second, and now, just a few years later, it's sixth. Now, I don't want to suggest that those ratios have dramatically changed, but even one or two differences will put you behind your peer group. So we've asked each of our universities to come forward with an aggressive plan to rebuild the faculty. We'll be able to report on that maybe by the next board meeting, but we have to pay for that somehow. And so this allocation is to help us recruit and retain faculty. And then the next category you see is infrastructure maintenance. This is reflects operations and maintenance to support new buildings, and such as the Siebold Center for Design at Urbana and the Engineering Innovation Building here at Chicago. And we also include in here some facility maintenance support from operating funds, because we never know if we're going to get a capital budget. You know, we haven't gotten one very often, so we build some money into the current operations budget for that. And then finally, payroll cost increases, standard Medicare, and some money devoted to IT and security upgrades. So I can come back and answer questions about any of these if you have them. This is just I think, a nice slide that shows you that when we adjust for inflation, while the increase to 16.5% may seem a lot, it still will be less than our 2015 budget, our state allocation, and really below well, certainly below 2015, it'll kind of get us close to 2017 when we adjust for inflation. So gives you a good sense of where this is relative to the last few years. I'll move on to capital requests. We are ever hopeful about a capital fund from the state. We did receive some reappropriations this year, mostly for emergency funds and some what we call legacy buildings that have been in the queue for a long time. But we have not had a robust capital funding for a good 10 years, and we will continue to advocate strongly for one. And this year, it looks similar to last year, what you approved last year, but a couple of changes. The repair and renovation is a little larger this year than it was last year, in part because our deferred maintenance is growing, but also because IBHE has recommended that all public institutions calibrate 3% of the replacement value of academic buildings and use that as the benchmark for this category. So it's a little higher than what it was last year. We have an innovation and workforce development category, which I'll show you in a minute, and we continue to work hard to keep our academic libraries up to speed and up to par. In terms of the specifics, again, I'd encourage you to look at your board book because it's a little small up there, but repair and renovation, you can see how it gets divided across our three universities. And then under the innovation and workforce development, we have four major projects that we are including here, and these were, I believe, all on the list from last year as well. The math data science collaborative facility at Urbana and the School of Art and Design addition, which ties into the Siebold Center at Urbana, and then the Computer Design Research and Learning Center at Chicago, as well as the Drug Discovery and Innovation Pavilion, which I think Michael will show you some pictures of in a little while. Those are very, really important projects, and they all connect very closely to the workforce needs of the state of Illinois, focusing largely around STEM and healthcare. Library and innovations and renovations, remember that our libraries serve all of our students, faculty, and staff, and they serve the community, and they're used constantly, and we have to continue to ensure that they're up to date. So much of this is just standard upgrades, but we're also including a student learning center, success center at Springfield here, where Springfield wants to bring together a lot of services into one place. Students can get tutoring and writing help and all kinds of things in a one-stop shop. So that reflects their allocation there. So I think that was my last slide. I'm happy to answer any questions about any of the particulars on the budget request.
So Dr. Wilson, would you say that the 2020 budget request shows great vision?
I think it does, yes, especially around the academic competitiveness category.
That was kind of supposed to be a pun, but
okay.
You guys are a really tough crowd, you know that?
We're also serious around money, that's because.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Joel,
I just please. I have one simple question.
Yes.
On the slide that shows the administrative efficiency, how, you know, it went way down after 2015, but it's certainly like on a trajectory upward again.
Yes.
So what's the plan of where it's going to land so we maintain the efficiencies that,
right,
you know, that we've gotten?
Yeah. We still continue to have a great amount of oversight on every hiring request. They have multiple levels of review, especially at the system level, but that's true also at the universities. We monitor this very carefully, and I think, generally speaking, we are very hopeful that we plan not to go back to the 2015 level, let's put it that way. But it is clear that we're a little understaffed right now in certain areas, and compliance is one, and a variety of the issues that we've been talking about the last few days. We can't do the job that we need to do unless we make sure we have the staff that we need. And remember that included in this are things like IT support, mental health counselors. So, you know, it's really important to remind all of ourselves that administrative costs don't mean bad things. They are really important, and many of them do support our students and faculty.
On that slide, I would note, because I saw it seemed like such a dramatic drop, and then the rate of increase seems high. But it's the way it's scaled. It always starts at 15,400. So I think if it started at zero, and I think it would look, you know, flatter.
Yeah, you always have to look at the axis, absolutely. And some of this was we had a hiring freeze in the system offices after the FY16 I don't know if I should call it a debacle, but it was certainly a problem, and we literally stopped hiring. And I know that the universities were very constrained as well around those times.
I'd just like to make a comment on the integration of the capital request, the operating request, our annual budget, our annual financial performance that Avija just went over, and our capital budget and spending going forward. Once again, I just want to remind everyone that absent a capital allocation from the state, our operating spending and our capital spending are tied.
Yeah,
it's absolutely not like we can go to the equity markets and raise money to build buildings. They're tied. And every time we say we are going to build a building, that means that's money that we're not going to put into faculty. And every time we put money into faculty, that means we're not going to put money into a building. There's no, like, as I said, capital, unless it comes from the state. So we need to constantly balance those things and understand how they relate to a long-term financial plan that's sustainable, where our student-faculty ratio does not get worse.
Right.
And I mean, we can say we all want to freeze tuition. We want to freeze it forever. But you have inflation, and to bring in more students at flat tuition every year, but not have enough money to bring in quality faculty to teach those students and keep the student-teacher ratio the same is not a sustainable path. And so that is why I think investment in faculty needs to be kind of front and center across our institutions. And we can't unfortunately pretend that faculty spending and capital spending are sort of two different buckets. And we have to remember how that ties to enrollment growth and tuition. It's wonderful to bring in more students all the time, but not if the student experience deteriorates because we don't have the money to keep up with faculty spending. So I just hope that as we develop this 5 and 10 year plan we've been talking about doing, not just on the capital side, but on the operating side, that we have to figure out a way to balance tuition, enrollment growth, and faculty, because there's nothing more important. We all went to college. There's nothing more important than the student faculty ratio and the quality of that faculty. I mean, buildings are very, very, very important. We know they are, but I think everyone would rather sit in an inferior building with a superior teacher in a small classroom. And so we just need to continue to invest in that faculty and not at the expense of the student experience.
Thank you, Trustee Edwards. I know the chancellors are really happy that you made that point. And I couldn't agree more with you. You know, previously you were talking with Avijit's slide about the capital has to come out of that money, and I'm thinking, yeah, but so does the faculty hiring, and
absolutely,
so do the emergency buildings that we have to fix, and so does the mental health counseling, and so does all, we are doing so many things right now, and we have to balance all of those and put them together in what you've continued to call for, which is an integrated 10-year plan. We've been doing that now, I think, on several of those topics, and now I think our next step, as the president I know wants to say, is to bring it all together and really look across all the levers, because every time you spend money on one thing, you're not going to have it for the other. It's
exactly
not like we have multiple pools coming
right
in. So, yeah.
I would just like to add to Don's point that I think new buildings and better buildings is certainly a part of the student experience.
Absolutely.
And I would just like to ask a question. Are these particular elements of the request, are they ranked?
Good question.
Oh, the five?
Yes.
No, I don't think they're ranked. They're just in there. We would never do that. But they're ranked in terms of all the other requests that the universities have behind them. So the universities have each submitted a 10-year capital plan, and these are the highest ranked of those lists for them. So, yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I just add a comment. Going back to one of the slides that looks at state appropriations and the up and down that we've had, I think we all have to understand that to accomplish the direction you want to go, to accomplish faculty, all the things, we've got to do it on our own initiative. Trying to depend upon state appropriations to change that is not a reasonable expectation, even though we certainly have requests and we want to go through. But I think we've all watched over the last 15 years as that state appropriation has continued to decline. This is just a little piece of it. And I think the responsible thing that, Avijit, that you're doing in planning and that you're doing from an administrative standpoint is successful. We got to figure out how to do it on our own.
Well, I agree with that. That doesn't mean that we're not going to go hell for leather at the state, and because these are state institutions, et cetera. I think the point that Trustee Edwards made about the quality of the faculty, I want to reinforce too. We cannot, I think the decline in student faculty was a product of the impasse. It's directly attributable to the fact that state funding went down. It wasn't something we planned on doing. We had to tighten our belt in some fashions. So that's been a salutary experience. We now need to rebuild that, and we will rebuild that. We're going to go hard for state appropriate state funding. We think we've got a great case to make, both on the capital side and on the economic impact side and on the leadership side and on the contributions to the state economy. All of that said, yes, the administration completely agrees that we've got to be very prudent and watch these efficiency numbers into the future, balance the tuition and the faculty recruitment. And this is our lives, and we will continuously report in on how we're doing.
Okay, thank you very much, Barb. Yeah.